Here.
Anderson.
Unexcused.
Hittinger.
Present.
Hudson.
Here.
Jimenez.
Here.
Lou.
Here.
Lukasiewicz.
Here.
Lustig.
Unexcused.
Ma.
Excuse.
Maletti. Ben.
Here.
DeFanco.
Unexcused.
Alvin.
Unexcused.
Thompson.
Here.
Tulsi.
Here.
Vanco.
Unexcused.
Wertoff.
Here.
Dow.
Unexcused.
Guys, I need you all to stop talking, please. Thank you. 17? Thank you. All right. First item on the agenda is approval. Thank you. Is approval of the. So there are two sets of minutes up for approval, April 10th and April 17th. Are there any motions at this time? Or any amendments? Yeah.
My point is,
They were sent out.
They were sent out in an additional email to you guys.
Yeah, got it. Across the essay listserv, so members of the
there's
been a motion to approve the minutes. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing that there is dissent, we are going to vote to vote. All those in favor of closing discussion on the minutes and moving into a vote, please raise your placards at this time. All those opposed? All those abstained? By a vote of 16-1-0, we are closing discussion on the minutes. There's been a motion to approve the minutes. It's been seconded. Is there, well, we've already been through this, but is there any dissent to the actual minutes that those are amendments that need to be made at this time? Seeing none, the minutes have been approved. We're going to move next to the first item on the, or to the next item on the agenda, is a presentation by Officer Lisa Van Horn, who is here on behalf of PUPD's Crime Prevention Unit. It's going to talk to us for a little while. You guys, the materials are going around at this time. They started. You guys should please circulate them. They've been on built in. And I'll give the floor to you.
Thank you. So, I'm Officer Van Horn, and I just want to come and make an introduction of myself and my unit within the department to offer you. Trying to keep tensions a little bit between the body of the police department and the body of the students. So, the crime prevention unit is here work with you guys to help you with whatever you need to help us take you while you're on campus. They are passing out a list of our programs. These are programs that we have that we can share right now, ready to go out of the box. If you, in your talking to other students, find that they have needs, please invite us in so we can talk to them and build a relationship with them. If there are other things that aren't on that program, we by all means will come up with something. It doesn't have to be even a specific program. We can just come in and talk to students about whatever they need. Last time they did a dinner down at Allen Cookhouse where they just invited us into dinner. We had dinner with them, we sat around the table, real laid back, and just did question and answer. And really just to build a relationship with everybody. People come from different countries, they come from different states, and the police are different in every different country and every different state, and I would love to get to know all those who's here and show them what the Cornell Alliance really is. So take a look at the program list. If there's anything that you guys are interested in, or any of your groups or individuals, get a hold of me or my partner, Beth. If there's any specific needs that you have, please get a hold of one of us so we can talk to you about it. I put my business card in there as well.
Just a quick question: about how many student groups, if any, have you all been doing this with, just in general?
The program themselves.
Yeah.
I couldn't even remember them. We do have statistics every month. We do a monthly management report, which I probably can get you a copy of, and that can show you month to month, year to year, what kind of program
we're doing. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was actually active and students were taking advantage of it.
It's active in the students and it's active with the faculty and staff. I mean, we're not just here for students.
Right.
The whole 15 or 20 months just with the students, and then the remainder is probably with that, something like that. But we do have to be invited into the group. We can't just say, hey, I'm coming in and talk to you guys tonight, or hey, I'm coming in and get the idea. We have to be invited into whatever residential organization you can invite us in. We can set up simply an information table if you just want an officer to come in, set up a table with whatever police information you want. We can do that as well. We really just want to get out there and talk to the students and show them that we are people too, that we really are here to work with the students. We're not here to just arrest and write tickets and traffic stops and stuff like that. We're as much educators here on campus as anybody else in the general professors. And you'll find that we do give a lot more education than we do write tickets and arrest. And I really want to put that out there.
Are there any questions at this time? Comments? Audience members included, by the way. Seeing none, thank you so much for coming here and stopping by briefly. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any, yeah, the extra material, I think they're still going around. The business cards might be right here, but the rest of the extras, Brian, were there. Right, there's number 18. All right, next item on the agenda, the graduate student trustee candidate presentations, the holdover from last week. So we have both of the trustees, the graduate student elected trustee candidates here today, Annie Vivie Finley and Annie O'Toole, both are here. So if you want to both come up to the table at this time, you each have 5 minutes to make your presentations. They're going to talk to each of you or to all of us about their platforms and the upcoming elections. Also, please note this was sent over the FA listserv, but for audience members as well, tonight is the candidate debate sponsored by the Cornell Daily Sun. It will be held at 6:30, which is immediately following our meeting in 401 Warren and 401 Warren Hall. So that's the ACWAD. So hurry over there. I know you guys will be running out of here very quickly to go make it to there. So.
Voted for and talked with rules, divestment, past resolutions, to reduce student debt. I'm part of a larger national campaign to reduce student debt and really connect with legislators and policymakers to make them aware that student debt is a huge issue, even though as young people we're not always vocal or as vocal as other groups. And so, with TA's experience and leadership at Cornell, my platform is a continuation of my ongoing work, and I think I really do a good job representing the students to the Board of Trustees. Thank you.
Annie?
Hi everyone, thank you for having me. My name is Annie O'Toole. I'm running for student trustee to address three issues here at Cornell: engagement, safety, and affordability. I'm a first-year law student. Before coming to law school, I worked for 3 years as finance director at the Congressman Brushhold of New Jersey. And in that role, I was responsible for raising millions of dollars each campaign cycle, writing and managing a budget of $2 million per cycle, and really engaging with the type of constituency that makes up the Board of Trustees, which makes me believe that I was able to work well with the board, and that I have the management and leadership experience that's carried over. Here at Cornell, I've been involved with the Women's Law Coalition, helped put together a women's leadership conference where women alum came back to campus and talked with the women at Cornell Law to talk about career paths and work-life balance and those kinds of issues. I've also run with these students to re-engage the Cornell Law School Democrats, which have gone mostly defunct. I remain an active alumna of Vanderbilt University, where I graduated from 2010. I continue to conduct interviews for Vanderbilt and for raise money for the class fund. And the three main issues that I want to address in this campaign: engagement is one. I think as a graduate student, many of us don't engage with the rest of campus as much as we could, and I think that the undergrads don't necessarily know about the really awesome events that are going on in graduate programs and might be interested in getting more involved with those programs. So I would like to increase the flow of information between undergraduate colleges and graduate school programs so that we can really take a hand in shaping our own learning experience and have a meaningful experience here at Cornell, which is so large and diverse that it's hard for us to take advantage of sometimes. On my second point, safety, I think that we really need to address the problem of sexual violence on campus head on. And I think preventative educational measures that start before freshmen even arrive on campus, continue throughout orientation, and are built into the curriculum here at Cornell could create a much better atmosphere and prevent that kind of violence. Also, as a graduate student, and the main thing thinking about it after reaching your upper class years at Cornell, I think finding safe off-campus housing options is a tricky thing here at Cornell. I recently had my apartment broken into earlier this semester and have to move. I'm proposing a peer-to-peer exchange of information about safe off-campus housing options. I think something like that would have really helped me when I was going through that time. On my third point, affordability. Obviously, tuition continues to increase, so I think, first of all, my fundraising experience is pretty creativity to the fundraising of Board of Trustees does to try to increase our endowment. I also think that we're now going to do a better job providing more information about outside scholarship resources to students. And I think that the Government Affairs Committee of the Board of Trustees should have tuition affordability, financial aid, and formal legislation at the top of their priority list when they go down to see the lobby members of Congress. Thank you.
Great. All right, great. Thank you so much. So now, at this time, we're going to open up the speakers list for 5 minutes of question and answer. We actually have ahead of schedule. Thank you. So the first speaker is Representative Hittinger.
Hi, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your platform experience. So I just wanted to ask, and this is going to be in to some degree a recap of what you've already mentioned, just to clarify. If elected, how do you plan to kind of keep your ear to the ground regarding student opinion, engaging them, the student body regarding many of the issues that you mentioned in your platform, as well as those that are being currently tackled and will be in the pipeline on those boards of these?
I plan to have office hours for students from the undergraduate programs and the graduate programs can come meet with me and come to the student assembly meetings, the GCSA meetings, the EA meetings. I plan to be very as accessible as I can be, making sure my email address is out there for the students to engage with me and accepting invitations to come to get groups and doing my own personal outreach organizations on campus to make sure that they know about the resources for them.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. I find myself in this really unique intersection at Cornell, where I'm a grad student who I don't have a background in, which means I take actually a lot of undergraduate classes to kind of build up those foundational experiences. Also, this upcoming, this next year, I'm going to be a teaching assistant and an instructor for my own lab section for bio class. So, I'm very much on both sides of the bench as far as instructor and teacher and grad student. This year I'm a research assistant, so my job is going to be changing a little bit. I'm also have connections to both sides of campus because my research is primarily on the band camp side with agriculture, but my teaching assistantship will be with the College of Arts and Sciences on the endowed side. And so having my ear to the ground is like everything. Most of my days will be spent among the students and working with you all, either in study groups or writing lessons. I'm voting member still for the GPSA, and I will continue my involvement with the programming board to kind of keep that institutional memory going. And again, like Jenny said, my information is public on my department's webpage. I have my own. The last group has a website, and everybody should reach out to me at any time. Thank you.
Next on speakers, this is Representative Bonatti.
Hi. So one of the overarching goals of Cornell in recent years in the plan for growth for the future is about internationalization. And both of the undergraduate colleges and the graduate school. And as we know, the graduate college, the graduate professional colleges have above 40% of the international students at Cornell. So what is your plan, both of you are American, and if I'm mistaken, so what is your plan to engage and support this very significant community, both in the undergraduate colleges and more importantly in the graduate schools where it makes that such a some percentage of the school?
When I was an undergraduate, I spent 14 months abroad. And I did two semesters, one in Vienna and one in Morocco, and I also worked a little bit in London at that time. And I think out of all the 4 years I was an undergraduate, that was probably the best experience of the whole, so I'm really supportive of the international communities that I've met abroad and the international communities, the different cultures that have come here. I personally, it's like, you meet somebody who's just like, oh, I've been in the States for 2 weeks, and you're like, well, here's my number, call me if you need anything, if you need to learn, how the bus works, or if you need to ride to the grocery store, you don't have a car. With the programming board, I've had a lot of interface with international students. I would say half of the group is composed of international students, and we also do a lot of diversity outreach. We paired up with different groups, students of color, and hosted different events to try and promote engagement. One of those was included in the 14 Destinations initiative, which I was reading today and I found very welcoming that my work here has been enough to become a document at Cornell.
I actually also spent a year abroad when I was in undergrad, so I really do appreciate the international perspective that I learned from being in France and really when I was a junior in college. And I've also been so impressed by the students at Cornell, how diverse the student body is in terms of the international component. I think it makes for really intellectually stimulating and a well-rounded education to have students from all over. group settings where students feel comfortable, but also encouraging the various international system campus to interact with one another and with the American students. And so I think that is something that's a little bit tricky to balance, but something that will benefit everybody's education at Fort Collins.
At this time, is there anyone in the audience who has a question at all? Max?
Right now, if you look at our relationship with the wider community, if you look at what happens in the College Area Forum District, meeting, if you look at what's happening in high school, a lot of happening. The relationship sucks. What message would you bring back to trustees when it comes to improve that relationship with wider district
community? First of all, this is the third college town that I've lived in. I'm from Princeton, New Jersey. I went to school in Nashville. And I actually disagree. I don't think that our relationship sucks. It's a pretty good thing. I think out of the three towns that I've lived in, Cornell has the best relationship with the town. And I think it is a difficult thing to balance because Cornell takes up so much of the town as opposed to maybe Vanderbilt, but very similar to Princeton. I think that continuing to engage in dialogue with the mayor, with the city council, I know that there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes than we necessarily know about. President Sporty mentioned recently at an event that we were at with him that he meets with the mayor very regularly because it's always the public eye of the student body. But I think that making sure that we are, first of all, paying the fair share that we should be paying, and making sure that our students are engaged with the community, is a big step toward making sure that everybody treats each other with respect. I think, personally, I think that keeping the free first year bus pass for CCAS will go a long way for making sure that the students continue to engage with the community. Right, I'm saying that I support keeping the bus pass.
I would say, to generalize that this is really changing, not to look at you. I'm answering this question.
You can pick it up. It's just on a stand.
I would say, to generalize, graduate students as a whole have a lot more interaction with the greater Islamic community. I myself am part of the community garden, so that a lot of the people that are, not involved with Cornell, but also like the garden. I know my roommates belong to the church, and they do a lot of church activities, and that's fairly a way of community involvement. I'm not familiar with the church forum that you mentioned, but my sense as a whole is that Cornell is this very large institution. It does bring a lot of good things to Ithaca, but it doesn't necessarily give back as much as it should. And I agree, $800,000 in debt to TCAT is disappointing, and I would even go as far as calling it painful. I really hope that the recommendations that I really hope that they do go forward in terms of keeping the first year bus pass. And I think there are a lot of other things that are happening. Ithaca, the INHS, Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service is a great resource, that helps people find homes and work to revitalize the community. And those aren't necessarily talked about enough at Cornell, the different groups that are out there that are supporting Ithaca.
Great. Thank you so much for being here again. Again, a reminder, you can hear much more about both candidates' platforms tonight at 6:30 and 401 Warren Hall during the actual candidate debate, which I encourage all of you to go to. Please be aware, I know it seems a little strange, but all students, including undergraduates, do vote in the trustee election. So I know that they're grad student trustees, but you all do vote, which is why they're here speaking to us today. So send around the blurbs and things to your constituent groups, please, and we will see you later this evening. And thanks again for coming today. Thanks. Best of luck to you both. Next item on our agenda is open microphones. PPP ballot.
Hi, so if there's anyone in the audience who has something they would like to address the assembly with but is not currently on the agenda, you can come forward at this time. Seeing none, open microphone is now closed.
It's the first time in a couple of weeks. So next item on the agenda is announcements and reports. Next first is a FARC update, Representative Henderson, who's not here. Is anyone sitting on FARC? Nope. So we're going to go right on to the organizational spotlight, VP of Public Relations, Harris.
Hello. So this week we are recognizing our biggest watchers. This is actually the biggest for any organizational spotlight. We have the most of the important numbers here, so thank you for attending. I'm going to pass it off to EPC Dallas to give the announcement.
This week, the FA is recognizing Cayugas Watchers as its organizational spotlight. We are recognizing CW and its members for their efforts to reduce the potential for alcohol poisoning, sexual violence, and property damage at Cornell. This initiative is a proactive student effort that is working hard to make the campus a safer place. Will the representatives of Cayugas Watchers please come forward and stand for recognition?
Come on up.
Come on up, guys.
We'll clap as you come up. We'll clap as you come up. That's good.
You guys are welcome to introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about what Watchers does.
Hi everyone, my name is Sarah Reynolds and I'm the president-elect of Cayugas Watchers.
Hi guys, my name is Hannah James and I'm the director of regional operations for Cayugas Watchers.
Hi everyone, for those of you who I don't know, my name is Nolan. I am the director of external operations for Watchers.
First, I want to thank you for nominating us as SA Spotlight Organization. For those of you who are unfamiliar with what we do, we are a student-led, non-profit, independent organization, and our mission is to curb high-risk drinking, to prevent alcohol poisoning, sexual assault, and property damage. Most people are shocked by how severe the problem is nationwide. According to studies reported from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism Task Force on college drinking, each year, more than 1,800 students die from alcohol-related unintentional injuries. 500,000 students sustain unintentional alcohol-related injuries, 600,000 students are assaulted by another student who has been drinking, and 100,000 students are victims of alcohol-related sexual assault or date rape. To help the Cornell community prevent these tragedies, Watchers recruits, hires, and trains students to anonymously attend student events at the request of the host organization. Student Watchers on duty interact with party goers using non-confrontational bystander intervention techniques to stop potential dangerous circumstances from escalating. Our goal is to have Cayugas Watchers become synonymous with having successful events at Cornell. We ask the members of SA and any organizations that you belong to support Watchers and our mission. Become a Watcher, encourage others to become Watchers, and hire us to work your best. Thank you again for having us.
Thanks so much for being here. Congratulations.
If you guys have any questions about what Watchers does, I'm a Watcher and I can help you out and I can also connect you to them. That's it.
Good times. Thanks again.
Thank you.
My premature clapping, sorry. Next item on the agenda is a SADAC update, VP Tulski.
No update. There will be a meeting next Wednesday at 8 a.m. for final meeting. And I have like $200 of money to spend.
Breakfast shall be in abundance at that ungodly hour. next is an Appropriations Committee update, VP Block.
Appropriations of the meeting. Great. next week we'll be having the first look at Appendix B, the employees.
Thank you. And finally, an internal elections announcement, EVP ballot.
I just wanted to let you guys all know that our e-board for next year has been elected. We sent you guys all that list of new committee chairs, liaisons, etc. So if you're currently in that position, it would be really great if you could reach out to the people who are going to take your spot so that we can transition.
And congratulations to all of those who have been elected. Those of you, I think you probably just said this, so never mind. But yeah, do what she says. Just quick question before we move on. Is this just mine or what happened? What is this? Oh. Do you need to explain this or could you explain it just please, just for my own reference? Yes, in the mic, please. I can't hear you.
Hello, everyone. For the start of this meeting, I passed out a survey from my organization leader project team. This survey would really help us provide recommendations for the SA moving forward and how they pay attention to student body and the dysfunction at the student assembly. I'd really appreciate if you guys filled it out, put your past years and how many years you've been on the SA. That was not included on the original survey, write it down. So return to me at the end of this meeting and I'll get back to you with recommendations at the end of the semester. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I just wasn't quite sure what it was, but sounds good. So everybody, if you could get that back at the end of the meeting, that'd be great. Committee chairs, you already got this in an email, but just to remind you again, so I don't forget, we are in the process of putting together our annual report. That's something I must submit, and you, as committee chairs, you each must submit a report also. So I need those reports in, as the email said, by the close of business on May 5th. If you do not submit those, please, me and Gina will have to go after you and that will be fine. Because we need that information. So thank you. All right, now moving on to new business. R73, changing the SAP commissioner cap to address increasing budget requests. Sponsors hit the table. George, would you need to? Got it.
Resolution 73 is a bylaw change. It cannot be voted on today, but it will require two votes of the members of the past.
Sponsors has 3 minutes to introduce.
We'll just start with 73.
What?
73 for all.
73.
Okay. So pretty much the idea here is as you guys all know, the number of requests, requests for the SAP ballooned this year by about 30-35%, all the way to about 520 organizations asking for funds from the SAP. What that has done is increase the load of work commissioners have. And they've always sort of scraped the line with the 30% cap, sometimes a few more, sometimes a few less. And with this added strain, everyone's just had a lot more work than usual. And made a lot of sense to increase some commissioners. So I think it's pretty straightforward. There's really no reason why they would kept at 30. They believe they would kind of maintain flexibility with the commissioners they get, and especially talk about really real quick and show why increasing the percentage.
So we do recruitment every semester, usually in the last third. This year we received over 75 applications, we got 24 interviews, and selected 13 commissioners to join the commission. So in reality, we can always expand recruitment even further, especially with 75 applications, even giving out 40 interviews allows us to maintain our selectivity. Also this year we expanded our recruitment efforts and have made conscious efforts to encourage members of underrepresented areas of the campus to join the ANC. So this year we're proud that we now have four new commissioners who are members of the engineering school and one member who is a member of the AA.
Watch your phone. Oh, AAP is a great school, then. Great college, thank you.
So I think this is pretty straightforward. Does anybody have any questions?
Oh, great. Are you done?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. All right. First person to speak is Lucas Remoletti. In the mic. Can't hear you.
I'd like the motion to amend the spelling mistake in the seventh line. This is where the... I think that's supposed to be direct.
It was supposed to be dramatic. We can amend that.
Okay, there's been a motion to amend from whatever that is to dramatic. Sponsored by Matt. That's consent. Okay. It's a spelling mistake. You'll work it out. Anything else? No? Great. You all are also doing 74 and whatnot, too?
Yes, we voted on them all together.
You can't vote on them, but they're bylaw changes. Yeah.
In the line 21, that they said to the consensus of no more than 40 and no less than 30, what was the previous numbers?
So the previous numbers were 30 and 20, so this would effectively increase the size of the commission, or the ability to increase the size of the commission by 10 members.
And why, if the previous maximum was 30, why is it the minimum amount as well? It was interesting that there might be a possibility that this is just a semester one off increase.
Yeah,
so maybe not a consistent for the past 6 years, it hasn't been so dramatic.
So we've seen an increase in groups in the past several years now. So it went from 10 increase in the spring of 2012 to 15% all the way up to 35%. And so increasing the size of the commission by 25% would just help us accomplish that. So it's been steadily increasing, and even with, so we usually see more of an increase in the fall semester as opposed to the spring. And even with that slight decrease from the fall to the spring, it was still way past the
I think also that there's, as you see from, he says they communicate selectivity. I don't think there's any reason, why they should go below 30. I mean, it doesn't help or hurt the organization either way. So we're just putting at 30, to make sure that there's what we have to look for the organization about that.
Great. So if there are no more questions at this time on 73, we're going to move on to our 74. Is that okay with you all? Great. Our 74, Jordan.
Resolution 74 will require a majority vote of the outstanding members to approve.
Go for it, 3 minutes.
So this is just pretty standard. They need a new commissioner, a bunch of seniors are graduating, so they have a bunch of people. If you kind of want to do a quick rundown, make sure you see that already.
So this new commission of five represents every single undergraduate in college, four of them are engineers, seven of them are sophomores, and six of them are freshmen, so we will be able to effectively train them and maintain them within our organization for the next several years. And just so you guys know, no one is going to get them.
That's always a plus. Great. First on two, this is Rep. Nadi.
First, I don't know if you can explain that maybe around the church. And secondly, you mentioned that now you have been using AAP. Is that because they were previously underrepresented? And also, if you can talk about maybe the international composition of SSD and the commission, like what percentage of them are international?
So the first one is in the past we've had a lot of experiences where commissioners were mainly from business backgrounds and not necessarily from areas representing the majority of the campus community. So in the past it's been a lot of IR, hotel, AIM students. And so now we're trying to expand to engineering, AAP, arts and sciences, because there's so many organizations within projects being talked about that don't necessarily fall in that finance situation. As far as the international area, we haven't received many international applicants, so if I would like to meet with you at this meeting, perhaps, and discuss ways to improve our group in that way.
So,
you
don't have any data on
the
level two out of 40?
Currently on the commission, we have two. In the new commissioner class, there's not.
Okay.
In terms of line 30, well, recently the SAA has come under attack for our sort of distance in the Cornell community. So I spoke to a popular lingo, and that's probably, it's a boy rather than I think that's the most common
Which will be changed. We look forward to the better. We don't do that. Thank you.
And then the final one is the field of
Are there any more questions about our 74 approval of the new SD commissioners? Since it is actually not a bylaw, this one is not a bylaw change, it is only currently listed as new business, but you are able to vote on this today. Yes. There's been a motion to move this to business of the day. Good job. There we go. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, this is now business of the day. So I'm going to call this. I'm going to go.
I have a quick question.
Yeah, question. BBC, so.
Just out of curiosity, in terms of the new class, is there any sort of stratification in terms of social Greek fraternity? Is there any sort of I just see a lot of particular fraternities in this class.
I'll go through our application a little more thoroughly. So we ask all applicants to answer two questions, one regarding why they would be good to serve on the FASB, their academic experiences, et cetera, and the other one demonstrating leadership qualities, because it's important that we work with the team to do all of that. So then you have our commissioners evaluate each application individually, and then we grant the top 20 to 30 applicants interviews. Then we individually interview each applicant, vote on them as a commission, and then grant them as new members on the commission. As part of that process, when we're evaluating the application, we make sure that any personal relationships are accounted for. So in doing the application review, there's a box that we check off on our form that says whether or not you know an applicant, and if you know them personally. So what we did this year was we came up with a threshold. So if more than 5 commissioners knew that applicant personally, we flagged that application and discussed it amongst the rest of the commission. But none of the people who were granted interviews crossed the threshold. So that was the representation.
Next. Oh, there's a. Can we try this one more person? Okay. You can go.
I just want to say, I think it's pretty embarrassing that you put boy on the resolution. I'm not kidding about that. Like, at the end of the day, like, there are times to joke around in the AP and my meetings when I'm more than welcome to joke around. But there are people who have been very upset, by the way, that SAC has handled their groups. And, you know, especially when I was my first 2 years in the assembly, there was a lot of pushback about the composition of the SAC. So I think it's pretty embarrassing that you guys would come here today and bring up a resolution like that. And, you know, you have responded by engagement.
This is something that we should
joke about.
Well, yeah, well, I'll just make that. I thought it was a thing that is, like, there would be, like, amendments that was going to be on there, but I apologize for that. And they also weren't involved.
I can't amend it once you put it on there. I can't touch it.
I motion to amend to strike Chaboy and replace it with
respectfully submitted. Yes. There.
Second.
The sponsors, the sponsors of course find that friendly. Thanks. Alright, so we're not even going to vote on that, but that will be a minute before it is actually folded along to the president. Are there any motions at this time?
I call the question.
There's been a call to question.
Second.
It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're just going to do a simple placard vote. All those in favor of approving R-74 and the new SASC Commission, please raise your placard. All those opposed? All those abstain? By a vote of 18-0-0, R-74 passes. Next item on the agenda is R-75, SAFC guideline changes. Joyce.
R-75 will require a vote of the
SAFC. Sponsors have 3 minutes.
Great. So just to give you all a quick overview on this, recently the SAFC has gone through several rounds of reviewing the guidelines and trying to streamline so that they're most effective for student organizations in terms of transparency and also accessibility. With respect to that, this resolution introduces a few changes, some to reflect modern updates, such as the Student Activities Office being changed to the Office of Student Leadership, Engagement, and Campus Activities, and others more seriously reflecting the technical limitations that the Student Assembly Finance Commission faces. With respect to that, currently the guidelines in section 312 read that the commission will provide several opportunities each semester for funding rounds. And although this is an idea executed in the past through a resolution,
the SAS has found we do not have the technical capacity through Orgsync to actually facilitate this. So we'd like to introduce this resolution in response to that. The other major changes are just typographical and clarification. So I think that that's all.
Okay. I'm going to open up the speakers if I'm actually going to start. In regards to the Orgsync question, what has been the progress? I wish Rep Vasco was here to actually, because I know he's on that Orgsync committee, or was at least. What's been the progress with Orgsync in that regard? VP Block, I'm not sure if you know either, or how you guys have been working with it. Well, has it been working at all? I know there have been a couple instances or hiccups because people have come here, so can you just describe that just a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So since the organization, since the university adopted Orgsync a couple of years ago, we've learned a lot. And I think that one of the most effective tools that SAS implemented was a step-by-step guideline, which is a document accessible through Orgsync that walks student organizations through the registration and also the application process. In terms of things that need to be improved in Orgsync and things that we're currently working on, one of the biggest pushes currently is to separate undergraduate student organizations from graduate student organizations into two different umbrellas, which is how Orgsync classifies the different organizations. And this will allow for SASD and GPSASD applications to be processed separately. This is something that would cost $1,000, but reduce. During this most recent funding cycle, we saw over $10,000 in errors because of this. So we think that it is a significant cause of confusion and something that's worthwhile to implement, both to streamline the communication capacity to Orgsync with the undergraduate and graduate student organization, but also the funding application out of it.
Now, who's paying? Who's paying for that, by the way?
And it's currently being reviewed. It's not. Okay. That's current business.
Got it. Just wondering. Any other questions? Sorry. Rep. Madden.
Yeah, so I looked at the document in point 3.1.2, which was also mentioned. Before the commission would approve at least three opportunities for submission of the project, right?
Okay.
Don't you think this was actually a change for implementing the last year?
Yeah.
And it came as a request by the overwhelming majority of the student body. And most organizations last year and in the previous year, they faced huge difficulties because of a missing signature or something very minor, they were unable to apply and then go the only round. So this was created as a way to, even though, yes, the government doesn't want to be able to see, even though that's the job of the SSC commission was the job, and it would also allow this organization multiple rounds. And so now that you're reducing from 3 to 1, are you also to mention kind of a safety net or some, are you giving extra guidance to organizations on what to do? Are you giving a second chance? Is it like it's just because of a signature missing? Because it's so simple for an organization, especially a large organization, that an advisor is abroad with a little bit and then never done again that whole semester they are allowed to get any money and that affects hundreds of students.
Yeah, so I guess I'll address your concerns individually if it seems that there were several. In terms of whether or not this allows for 3 versus 1, SASC does not currently have the capacity to accept 3 budget rounds each semester. That was something that was possible in the current system, or under the past system, but since moving over to Orgsync, that is not something that Orgsync supports. So, in terms of the technical, we've had several conversations with Orgsync, and their policy is that any changes to their system at a system level, just in terms of a technical standpoint, have to be beneficial to all the universities that they're working with. So this is something that we're trying to convince them to do a lot on behalf of, but currently the support isn't there. But in addition to that, I'll just speak to the current system. Having one funding room at the beginning of this semester and at the beginning of the previous semester, in both semesters we received demand over anything that we've ever seen before, and we actually had more requests coming in for the amount of money that we were allowed to allocate. So in terms of demand from student organizations and SASD's ability to effectively allocate all the funds that were given by the bylaw process,
FIC stands in a very strong position in that respect, that we are effectively allocating money to student organizations. With respect to the concern that, for instance, an advisor's signature might be missing if an advisor goes abroad, the new electronic system is very versatile and it does allow advisors to go abroad and people still submit that form as opposed to having to sign and fax form, staff form. But in terms of the guidelines, FASC doesn't reject applications out of a desire to reject applications, but rather you're governed by the guidelines that are very strictly written that all electronic signatures must be in place. So unfortunately, if advisor signatures aren't there, we cannot review the applications.
Just to add some of that, so when a group submits a bunch of applications, they have a hard deadline, and then if they're missing anything while we're reviewing them, we then give them another deadline to release any missing documentation for signatures. And so if a group doesn't comply after the second warning almost, then they'll like, do you deserve to get the money?
Okay, sure.
DB
Block.
And I was just going to add, I mean, I think something to keep in mind is when you try and make it independently happy to click easy for groups to access funds, but at some point, you know, we expect some semblance of fiscal responsibility. And, you know, at the end of the day, the SAC makes guidelines very clear. You've got any information session about it, I think it's pretty clear what's required of you. And I'm sorry if I missed this, but another reason why the signatures are required is for auditing purposes. Do you have such on this? But yeah, you basically, by law, you have to have these signatures in place, and that's kind of why they exist.
Yeah, I can say that the signature was just, I guess, the most common example of why organizations need the money. It was just an example. I'm not at all against the mission. I'm just concerned that going from what was supposed to be 3 to 1 could affect the student body as a whole. But if you're confident that you're able to warn the organization that they will only be given that chance with enough pre-warning, then that's fine.
Yes, this is something that we believe there will still have to be effectively
operating. Any other questions this time on R75? No, then thanks so much. Or motion, sorry, but either way, you're good. Thanks. Is there another one? You have one more? Jordan,
you could.
Say it again. Yeah, you can move to business. There's been a motion to move it to business of the day. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, this is now business of the day.
Call question.
There's been a call to question on R75. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are now voting on R75. All those in favor of approving the changes to the SAC guidelines as they are currently written, please raise your placards. Somebody walk out of the room? Oh, okay. All right. I was like, not adding up. All those opposed? All those who abstain? By a vote of 17-0, R75 passes. It's a bylaw change. As required, all bylaw changes have to be seen a week in advance. Sorry. All right, moving on to...
I'm
Oh, sure.
I spoke a lot long about this. I have to say, so I'm going to actually move R77 above R76 in the agenda, just to make sure that we touch it this week, so it's eligible to be voted on.
Sure. There's been a motion to move R77 to now. Is there any consent to that?
Well, the Parliament procedure doesn't need to. I thought we clarified before that it doesn't necessarily need to be spoken about as long as it's on the agenda, because it presumes that all the members of the assembly have the opportunity to read it over. So if that, in essence, as if it was presented to the ability to do the next meeting, that
true. We never decided that like that.
No, I mean, this has been discussed in the past.
Not on this assembly.
Not on this assembly.
Anything that's new business listed as new business and we haven't actually gotten to it, it's still been listed as new business the next week. Yeah. Just because that we need to discuss. And something like both 76 and 77 are surely going to need to be discussed at once.
For sure.
So, all right. Yeah. Any dissent in moving R77 to now? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and do that right now. So sponsors for R77, addressing the student activity fee endowment fund charter change. Hit the deck.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for letting me come up. At this point, we've been talking about this for a number of weeks, and realistically, we've been talking about our endowment for many months and years now. So I did want to say my computer's been a little screwy lately, so I think I sent in a version of a little outdated, especially with the language in terms of the composition I know and appropriations. A little bit about, does the president of the assembly need to be a voting member who already sent me an ad hoc member of our race, for example. So, next week I'll be sending a few amendments. I mostly wanted everyone to look through sections 7 and 8, which is permitted applications and prohibited applications, and just kind of get a sense of what people are thinking about this. I hope that this guideline will guide the committee in the future for the way I see the fund working, which is to work on infrastructure projects that have a tangible impact on campus. I'm certainly willing to take any questions on really anything, but I think at this point you guys kind of, we've talked about this a number of times, and you guys kind of get what we're trying to accomplish here. Open any questions.
Okay, at this time I'm going to open the speakers list. First up is Rep. Nadine. Sure, is there anybody else want to speak at this time? Shocking. I would hope there would be people on speakers for this, given the depth of this. I hope you all read it in depth. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sarah?
Yeah, it's okay. Enrico, you can go first.
My main concern is that in permitted applications, it says construction of new infrastructure, example, bike racks. I think that's something that you should probably clarify in your language, just because an infrastructure can mean a lot of things, and unless you want an infrastructure to mean practically almost anything, you should probably have some more clarification other than just bike racks.
Yeah, and as far as that goes, it's hard for me to assume what sort of infrastructure, what sort of CapEx projects the committee is going to be considering in the next number of years. It's a good example of something of an intangible good that people would use that would exist, but to me, I don't necessarily want to limit the committee in terms of types of infrastructure. There are the prohibited applications, but those aren't types of infrastructure or anything like that. If there are guidelines that consider them. Just the point behind this is that we want to give the committee flexibility to respond to the needs of the students, which might be very different depending on, someone in an ag school might be, or might want something put in their building that's very different from someone in IOR or someone in arts and sciences. So my goal is to give broad guidance, push the committee in a general direction, but then give them the flexibility so that, it's not like text semester you're trying to put together a project. And then as well, does it meet the technical definition when you need the spirit of what the fund is supposed to be about?
But Repinati.
Yeah, so under prohibited applications, I think we need a good start, but this would be like reasonable amount sums of money that students have given in the past. I think the government should be a little bit more. So, for example, under Section 8, an application that directly or indirectly subsidizes the cost of tuition of the non-people students. Yeah, that, I agree with that, but I think it's important to make clear that all the money that is given to the community needs to benefit purely the students and the Cornell community. So, for example, Cornell have really great organizations like the Pop Shop and eLab and different organizations, and they constantly ask for money for their startups, that sometimes are not for profit and other things, that they're Cornellians and they have ideas they want to develop, but those do not benefit the Cornell community as a whole. I want to see something that very clearly sponsors a project that can benefit the whole community inclusively and doesn't include anybody. So it has to.
Rep. Nadi, but is there a question? It's still new business, got to keep
yeah,
it.
So
not arguing about the nature of
it. If you have thought about doing something like this and what you think should be exactly the role of the money in terms of like funding only things that benefit all the community.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent question, and I think that maybe I could have framed it better, but also look to section 6, which is eligibility, and that's kind of even more broadly what types of things we're trying to fund. So the core thing is we develop and organize by Cornell undergrads, and once you have applications, you want to take Cornell undergrads, then these are the things on campus that we hope to improve. B, allow us to equal access to services. I think this is something that could potentially become a debate in the committee in the future, and I hope it doesn't really. But the point is kind of to prevent what Representative Bonatti is talking about, right? That we don't want, like, maybe the cost structure, but, like, is a 3D printer in the cost structure as open as, like, something like a bike rack would be, for example, you know, just throwing ideas out there. That's certainly something that the committee is going to have to debate, because in theory, we're wanting more access to all students, but the point behind that is that we want projects that all students are going to be helped by. I think something that was brought up in our past con was something like our collegiate leadership program is something that we fund that like so many people use on a daily basis. It really is like, I think it's getting access to all students. Out there, COVID, people are dropping by it. And then the other two, C and D, are pretty much to prevent the funds from being used by groups in the know. We don't want this to be something where some group kind of just, we don't want this to become the fund for groups that understand our financial systems and just try to capitalize their own activity. But we really want this to be a little bit more organically driven. We want students to bring in their complaints, things that they want to improve, and then we need to act upon them, not to kind of help groups that exist. Not supposed to, even things like, I remember we special projected a few years ago, the composting club wanted composting things, right? To me, that's something that they can naturally have expense for in their SAC. So that's the kind of example of things where a club already needs to spend money on something, even if it's an infrastructure project, they can probably go to the SAC system for that.
Great. Next on the speakers list is VP Harris.
Thank you. Section 8. I'm gonna start off with a question about Part A. So I think it's good in theory that we're basically creating applications for something that doesn't receive funding fully or if you don't get reimbursed due to an applicant error. My question is, how do you plan to verify this? I'm a little concerned that it's kind of difficult sometimes to exactly know the source of the funding or if your project is going to be successful. What are the mechanisms you have in place to ensure that this is really done properly?
Sure. So realistically, we don't expect that the majority of applications will be for a direct route. Like, I would hope that the kinds of applications we're getting, like, hey, this part of the library is free font plus, like, that's no group is, like, you know, no group is actually applying for that. But in the situation where maybe a group like a CUSC comes in with an application for, hey, we'd like to see this improvement on campus, this is something that we can certainly, either if they're buying funded, you know, look at, did they put that in their budget, or if they're SAC funded, we have clear records of what they applied for. The main point behind that is, again, I don't think it's going to be a common occurrence. I don't really think that this is not for groups as much as it is for the student body more broadly. It's just, again, to reiterate the fact that we don't want this fund to become, you know, there are a lot of tuck-away funds that some students know about that they access every couple of years when they're eligible, or you know, every year when they're eligible, and I don't want that to become this. I really want this to become something that students individually and collectively use rather than a group organization kind of basis.
Yeah, thank you. Also, my second question is, I'm a little concerned about the transparency in terms of, like, where the funding sources go. Do you plan to have some sort of report issued at the end of the semester, each year? What are your plans for kind of communicating to the students?
Yeah, so I think this is going to be something that is going to have to be worked with over the summer. But there definitely needs to be some sort of PR plan, I think. And maybe I'll even look into adding a line to, like, the BTPR responsibilities or something like that, or something like meetings left. And, you know, like anything on the essay, they're going to release an end-of-the-year report.
I think the biggest way that we can stop this from being a transparency problem is really pushing this as much as possible. And, you know, I guess we'll just be talking to the future members of the assembly over next year's assembly. We have money to communicate to. We have money now. And this is the sort of thing where this can work very effectively. It's been very successful at certain schools, but we don't want this to become a fund where it's just like FA members together kind of talking about what things do they hear or problem. So really push this one hard. We're going to spend that money up front to get people talking about this. You know, pull out your list, add in the fund, add the line, push this over the list, get people talking about it, and I think that will improve the success of it a lot, especially if people know that there is a place where they can go to solve these kind of problems. And that also ties into our website. You know, make sure, again, reiterating and trying to push the idea of our website as a portal for students, which is just another thing. Not only are you getting funding, not only are you getting kind of help with that day, but also if you have a project that you'd like to have on campus.
Next on the speaker's list is DOE Maglia.
Jeff, I have a quick question about your definition of organization. Like we were talking about eligibility a lot. So is it a registered independent or a university organization that has authorization to receive funding? So how would like an independent organization have authorization to receive funding? What exactly does that mean?
Sorry, where are you looking at?
Okay, long section 4.
Got it. So the point behind that is that in general, I mean, that's just about an organization. I mean, what we're talking about in here, kind of like the prohibited, permitted applications, we're looking for student groups on campus. You know, we're making sure the student organizations that are registered there are, so are not getting the money if they fail to receive funds through a different system. And we're also making sure that, and I don't know if there's a lot of language about explicitly with organizations, but. Like, is there something specific?
I'm wondering what you mean, I guess, more towards the independent organization. What is an independent organization?
Oh, sorry. So that's just a classification within org things that we have. So basically, your university organization, you have your mission is in line with the academic department. So for example, like the student assembly is in the university organization. There's something in most organizations are independent organizations, so they're not sponsored by department.
But still, even if it's an independent organization, this is a group that is still needs to provide the SAC.
Yeah, the vast majority of SAC funding groups are independent. So like all club sports teams are not associated with the department, they're just state funding advisors, for example.
Okay.
Really bright up here.
Next on the speaker's list is Rep Hudson.
Yeah, I have a question. Obviously we talked about maybe all the potential for renovation. Suggested things, including going outward in the year stack. Have you talked with any administration regarding facilities and planning of how it's really going to work out with the contract? For example, if I say come up with these sort of ideas and scope quote, how are we supposed to negotiate a mitigation between either independent contractors, university contractors, and what's the response to kind of from the administration in terms of how we would work with them? Because obviously we're going to have to work with the university if we are, say, adjusting, editing, or renovating your building.
Right. So this is something that I'm actively working on now to get a kind of document. My hope is that we'll have a kind of set list for how the process would work. But I think more broadly, you're going to be working with individual building managers. Like Cornell is kind of a split up place. So we're not normally going to be having necessarily the same person. But just kind of generally, the number of conversations I've had that this is something that is not, you know, there, no one's going to be pushing back, but no, we don't want improvements in our building. The big debate is going to be cost, where are we getting that? And I think from our end, we have to make sure that, especially when we are going to be relying on administrators, there are a lot of call mechanisms. We've got to make sure that we're using our money as effectively as possible. So that's just something that the committee is going to be needing to do to make sure, are we getting a good price for this, is it efficient use of funding, et cetera. And I think that this is definitely going to be a pretty steep learning curve in the first year. But it also just kind of depends on the type of projects that the assembly wants to take on. You know, there are certainly a number of things that I'm thinking the speakers here in the college. You know, from our end, it's not quite, not very difficult project. You know, we asked about it, we figured out what we needed here, and then, you know, transferred the funds over and it got done. So it depends on the complexity of the project. It all kind of depends on what we have to do.
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Hittinger.
Hi, thanks for coming out today, Vice President Walker.
So basically, my first question is, you touched on it with the Wexler bag and all these things. I guess I wanted to kind of ask whether you see a utility in formalizing it in this specific portion of what would be the charter or the assembly about simply like tasking and kind of creating sort of accountability in making sure that all the student body are aware of this innovation fund and have formal means of like actually being able to be informed about it and information sessions, that type of thing, even if it's like a line somewhere. So that's my first question. And second question is, under permit applications, do you think that there might be a way, because reading over this, I know that it's kind of like an ideological like, approach to this fund and wanting to be registered organizations who haven't sought other, or who have sought means of funding it so that they're not simply wasting money, but you feel that the language in Section 7 might perhaps be able to be a little bit expanded or clarified in the sense of like giving further examples, Vice President Ballack brought up the bike rack, for instance. And my third question is simply under Section 6 for eligibility and stuff, since it'll be in the charter, I'm a little confused on like just the sentence structure and saying to be eligible for student funding award from the SAIS, an application must be for a project or initiative must. You mean to say an application for a project or initiative must? You mean to stretch out the must be? I was just a little unclear on that part.
Okay. Well, as far as your third question, I got to clean that up a little bit, don't I? As far as the first question, I think I've gotten some number of people with the carry of the RF, so that is like essential to success. So what I'm thinking of doing now with basic feedback is under Section 9, which is procedure for determining funding gifts, we can add in a section there, something either within release of application or a Section B, like the promotion of application, just set up a few things that will get done by the committee. So like the chair of the committee will make sure that the VGTR does action, and maybe also done with UD and, or excuse me, BG Harris, and kind of determine what we could do about that. How about for next week, I'll put in another section there just to give explicit responsibility. And that way the committee chair has in their document, in their charter, specific things that they can expect from the BGDR to hold them to it in the charter. And as far as the second question,
simply in the language on
With the Section 7 permitted applications, different types of examples. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good idea. I'll add a few more examples, kind of just general things that we're thinking of. But again, I don't ever want it to be seen as some sort of exhaustive list. I don't want it to get too long because I can never predict what sort of weird things you have to come up with to find that.
Great. You good?
Do I have a little bit more time left? Under the simply the eligibility portion, actually it's on the front, what's defined in the definition section form of what is considered an organization. We talked about this last year and other times, just kind of brainstorming for this, but would it perhaps be beneficial to be able to open up the application to ideas that could very have great benefit on campus, but kind of it was just kind of concocted during that year, so it hadn't yet gone through the SASP application process to be on organization, but it's something that
Doesn't
it have to be something part of the organization? That's what I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're all clarified. I think that part of this is just that I sent in a little bit older of a form, but some of this language is a bit of a holdover from the original innovation fund, and it seems like the organization one might be one. If you look through the eligibility, the application, a lot of the language within it, I don't really speak a lot about organizations because it's not really organization-centric anymore. That's kind of what I was thinking about that. I don't even see anywhere really where we're talking about organization. The big point between the reason why we keep in eligibility, not being on the applicant who recently received funding for it, we still, even though we don't expect it to be something that is primarily organizations of applying for. We don't want organizations who may have, like, maybe focus on improving infrastructure to become the fund when they mess up their application. I want to put it in practice. That's the only thing we need to deal with organizations in terms of a prohibition. But realistically, like, there's no barrier to individuals. I've encouraged individuals. This is what we want, is for individual students to see a problem on campus and say, hey, I wonder if that thing can take care of this, because it's been ignored. And, you know, the SA should certainly always ask the teachers, will you be one to pay for it first? You know, there's something probably I felt out in there that, you know, we can always ask if it's going to be something that gets fixed in the next year. But the point is, for projects that either students really want to be interested, there's no interest in funding, or projects where we partner with the industry to partially fund, this is the fund for it. And it doesn't matter whether you're a registered student group that wants it, a non-registered student group that wants it, just an individual student.
No. Rep. Ali Khan.
So I think one thing that I think most everyone here on the assembly and also on appropriations committee commonly was that there should be members from all different colleges on this committee, and when looking at the composition of it, there's not to be a lot of space. I didn't see that, so I was wondering if that's something that you're going to do.
Yeah, that'll be in the next draft. Again, I do apologize for that, because my hard drive's dying again. But yeah, basically, you can just kind of expand upon this point. We talked about FNASCOM, I think it's a great idea. It's not all 7 community members, it's only one from every college, but of the 15 total members, we'd like one from every college. And this is actually probably amongst all committees the most important for this committee, because we are literally asking the committee to look out for things that are, things that we can improve on campus, and there's really no way for us to be able to get all of campus without someone who's in every single college, you know, all, because of all the different needs that we have. So that's definitely something that we'll be putting in there. I think it's very valuable for the community. If there are no more questions, I'm going to ask them to table this.
There's one more question. Okay, VP Batista. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Why aren't you talking?
Yeah, thanks for moving forward. I think we've done a fair amount of work on the outcome. I definitely think that's good to vet through ESA. Raises as a question in the part that says Youth Assembly Innovation Fund Committee, do you plan to include timeshares elected just as EDC elect and looking forward to the future? It doesn't state any specifics about timeshares elected. In fact, that's definitely number. And then the second question, to build off what Syed has sent out, the email, he's done a lot of research, and I just want to give him credit for that. Do we plan to follow what some of our peer institutions have done in terms of, like, having some sort of polling or some sort of, like, input? Do we want to include that in legislation? Also, we talked a lot about how we're creating, possibly including the legislation, the line about a PR plan. Why do you have the Vice President of Outreach serving on the Innovation Fund Committee and not the Vice President of Public Relations, if you're talking about that? Or should it be the Vice President of Outreach and maybe should be an outreach plan on the PR plan? So just, yeah, two questions, yeah.
I'll be honest, after all the time I've spent here, the outreach PR line to me is still a bit blurred, quite frankly. But as far as the, what was your first question?
No, it's fine. That was about the election. Do you plan to?
I expected this to be elected much like any other committee, and internalized and treated just like any other committee. I'm going to send out, I'll send out to all the SA members of the listserv on kind of an updated copy of the part of this weekend. And hopefully that'll solve all the
Could you also send it to the office so they can update
the resolution? Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, the point behind it is, and there was something about the PR plan.
Yeah, so the first question was how is the chair going to be elected, and that should be included in the legislation. And then the second one is outreach versus PR, there's an outreach plan instead of PR plan, and you plan to have some sort of infrastructure for people to submit ideas instead of like, hey, I want to put something in on campus and let me submit. I think there needs to be something in legislation about a more streamlined channel.
Okay. You can certainly set up that channel. I would imagine that from my end, especially in the beginning, you want to accept submissions kind of as broadly as possible. So even some of the strike of all paragraphs and like, hey, it's something that now I'm interested in seeing done, it should be pretty easy to dispatch one of the committee members and say, hey, can you contact the building manager? We're interested in you to send out this, let's fight that to be faithful. As far as polling goes, I've never been one to be super into polling, and
directly about it. This is kind of your committee, not mine. I think that, again, you are elected to kind of get a sense of, you are elected to speak for students. And there are things that we can do, we can outreach these, we can, you know, push them on Facebook, ask, what do you guys do for these different things? But at some point, you know, I think it is good to be somebody who makes the final decision after taking as much input as possible, if only because, you know, you never want it to become something where, like, you know, we talked about the ILR sometimes, don't all the ILRs just band together and somehow manage to that everyone in ILR votes for this, and then that's the policy we go for, even though it's something that anyone in the library would affect more students. So that's why I always think it's good to, especially in a school where not everyone votes on these things, you know, realistically, I think it's always good to get as much, to outreach the students, get as much feedback as we have possible, and then make an informed decision based on the feedback that we garner.
Yeah, I guess it's probably just a clarified point. I kind of meant more like how it's used to have like an email or something, right? Where you can just submit like, this is what I see and I'd like to see changed. Can you guys take a look at this? So that's, I'm like, sorry, my confusion for language.
Yeah, I mean, something like that would be great. And I think that something that I may put in the plan, I think that the VCR could very easily set out a form email and say, hey, you know, at the start of the year to all students, this is a new thing that we have. We now have access to a significant amount of money to solve the problems that you have. So when you're walking around, what are things you want to see improved? And I think that Zeus made great, you know, a very high quality video about this, and that's the thing that we should be starting to do. We should have students ask that question themselves, what do I want to do with different campus?
Great. Thanks. I know you have to go, so go ahead and run. And this will come up again next week, so everybody will be able to have a full discussion, make all your amendments and such at that time. Next on the agenda is R76, fall 2014, or verifying the fall 2014 election for
responses. Resolution 76
was enacted
legislation to amend Section
First on the speaker, this is Rep. Ali Khan.
I think it's a great idea to be able to do that other universities that have a very high voter turnout in favor of such things. I would like to turn to Article 2, Section B, Subsection 2. I know that last time around, Article 2, Section B, Subsection 2. So I know that last time presented to you over the spring, you said that a subsection was added. So the subsection was added help booster voter participation and make this a more lively debate, so that people can get to know people's platforms more, things like that. And now we're past that first election with this subsection, and I think what we saw was less people ran in the race. There was a lot of uncontested seats, and the voter turnout didn't change, it was not a little lower. So, and being one of the, I think one of the two proponents of, a similar system like this and going into, going from place to place, looking back at it, I think that, I don't see the use of this. I think that, candidates are, stop focusing on theirs and tend to focus on, the race above them and whatnot. And that's the thing, but the facts show that, there's less people running and there's also less, people voter turnout. So I was wondering what your thoughts on this are and, maybe on motion vote.
Well, first, I'd like to start by clarifying again that these are only for the fall election. So I encourage everyone, when you are thinking about this, to think about how is it going to be affecting freshmen, truck-up transfers, and LGBTQ races. Obviously, it's still good to have this conversation ahead of time, but right now, this is a priority. And I push it, not to dodge the question, but to push the ball back in your court, to say that you've been one of the most outspoken members about the election rules this year.
Just to clarify that one of the components is going towards
And I guess what I would say is that it's been very discouraging to me to see that any change to the election system, if we have this system that needs to come through the election rules. And what our job as an election committee is to restore it to make sure that the election is fair. And other than that, it falls on people who choose to run, why they run, the issues they're promoting, and basically to be accountable for the people that we vote for. And all we can do is try to provide that baseline, the best baseline possible, to give you that encouragement and to give the proper incentives for matching people around. Personally, I think the reason we didn't have as many candidates this year, as we told the Sun, was a combination of a bunch of people who currently run the assembly deciding not to run again, plus people who we've been encouraging to run. We lost a lot of momentum because of the election calendar in February break. And that would fall that I could do it again, and I would have had positions due a week later, just so that we have to halt the entire 4 week back on campus. Unfortunately, that was February, they came back on Wednesday, which is to do that one, it was too short of time. So that was something that we just there. But that will fall on the next year, we just have a good time next year. So, great. Your question.
Yeah. Okay, next on the speaker list is Representative Hittinger. Can you pass him?
Hey guys, it's Steve Arjun, long time. So basically, I just, I agree with everything in this. I just kind of wanted to ask a bit more about things that are more, promotional in nature and kind of like see what thoughts you guys have brewing, for, election season moving forward. As you've already touched on, the turnout this semester was, lower than at least for like the previous semesters that I've been on the assembly, like you mentioned, a lot of factors that contribute to that. So, have you considered, things such as trying to bring, more events for like information, for the potential candidates that kind of try to engage the current assembly members more? Because for me, the reason I ran is because, I'm actually in Lebanon, and so like the assembly right before me was like the entire board almost. Guys, like they it was more of a personal connection that got me done for it, and that was something that kind of transcended, you know, like the election calendar, you know, coming after February break, you know, getting more of that personal appeal to people to, you know, get people to run for student assembly who are really convicted about, you know, making a difference on campus. So I just kind of wanted to inquire what ideas you have brewing for future election seasons to really engage people more and encourage them to run.
Absolutely. Our strategy this year was to do that through the student organizations. That's why when we had this on the first fund article, I helped the most on the endorsements. I did not run for this position thinking endorsements would be my platform, but gradually with the conversations we had with the election committee, it seemed like the best way to engage students was to do it through the clubs they were already in. And it, you know, it's really just a philosophical question. Is it the job of an election committee to promote events, or is it the job of different student organizations to endorse, you know, to promote, you know, student assembly elections? Like, we are constantly, as a committee, trying to defend the fact that you should be interested, that you should be running. Then we fall into an institutional bias, and that's something we try to break this year by doing it through the student organizations. Unfortunately, it didn't translate to voter turnout. I really thought it would. And maybe it's just one year, it's too early to tell. But at least, you know, that's my idea. And going forward, my plan would fall, like I said, in the previous question of the next DOE event. You know, the next group, you have your election this weekend, heard everyone's platforms. And hopefully whoever you elected, you know, has a good idea on how to make it happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately, man, and you said it yourself, you know, what got me to run was, you know, seeing people that you knew running. And I think it's all about, like, those individual connections that, you know, facilitate voter turnout, not necessarily just, you know, reaching out to organizations. You know, I think, like, if you, you know, 2 years ago, like, you know, Ulysses and I ran, like, if 3 people ran for president, you know, EDP was well contested, a lot of seats, there's a lot of competition. I think that's really led to voter turnout, not necessarily people, you know, presenting in front of organizations. Because, you know, if I'm presenting to, you know, the Society of Women in Politics, the chances are I don't have too many people. But if someone, you know, if a member of that organization is running, you know, they're going to be much more engaged. You know what I mean? I think that's what it's really all about. And these rules, I would encourage you guys, and like Alphon said, you know, this is for fall 2014, but also spring 2015. Jesus, I'm getting old. In spring 2015, you know, I would encourage you guys to look at the amount of signatures you require on petitions as well, because, you know, that in some cases could be considered prohibitive. And the more people that run, I do believe will create the voter turnout as before.
Great. And also, I do want to point out that maybe overall, overall voter turnout was good, I think, or was lower. I think we have acknowledged that, but it should also be said or be spoken for that we had because of Alphonse and the work the Elections Committee did, there were a lot more student organizations overall that were involved in this election, and I think there's just a little bit of trade off. So keep that in the bigger picture in the back of your mind. Next is Rep. Moon.
Okay, so my question is about the voting booth portion that you guys pointed out to us earlier. I think you said something else. But I really like this idea, and I think it was one of the best ideas that was brought up to us from the current people who ran for DOE this year. But I am also a little bit concerned about if you put voting booths on campus, how voters would feel if they were pressured into voting a certain way. So I actually changed the language a little bit, or like added some language to say on the days of the election to include, however, any candidates running in the election or any supporters acting on their behalf may not campaign within a 200 foot radius around the voting booth. So that's just something to consider for you guys, and that is a
second.
Hold on, push pause. Before we even get to this, can you say that for next week, actually, this is new business right now. We're actually not going to make formal amendments on this packet right now, but save it, actually communicate it to them, and you guys bring it back next week, all of that. It's okay.
If you don't mind commenting real quick before your next point, I think that's a great idea. It's actually something that's listed in the trustee election rules that when I was looking at again this week after having already submitted this, it's like a question that they have that in there. So I'm absolutely over the next 7 days, I'm willing to entertain. Even this year, we had a booth outside 626 on the fall election, and 2 or 3 times I could tell candidates just move away, you know, like we're standing way too close to me. So if we have one
and we can talk about the number later. I just forgot what it is. But my second question is on the second page of your packet. We discussed last fall to increase all the patient signatures by 25 and 50 for EDD and president. And it seems like to me that the biggest goal next year is to increase voter turnout. So I was wondering what you two think about the numbers right now as it is. And thinking about increasing voter turnout, is it better to keep the numbers as they are to increase election awareness, like before campaign starts, like if campaign action starts? Or do you feel like the numbers just to increase them actually limited the number of candidates who ran this season?
I would say that as you were one of the ones that, thought inflation is right. I don't think that there were students who said they wanted to run for the student assembly, and seeing that they needed 150 signatures, that was their, that's what stopped them. I really don't think it was. You look at people who were currently on the assembly, who were considering running for those positions, who ultimately decided against it, and in the past they had way more signatures than that. So I don't think that's what ultimately deterred them to be specific about it. At the same time, I do think if you have some extent to trade off between people who do a better job of reaching out to candidates and spend time getting more positions. And because of that, maybe they aren't thinking about the issues more because they're spending more time getting signatures. So maybe that hurts. So I guess my short answer is I don't know, but my gut tells me that the increase in numbers did not decrease the turnout.
Next on the speaker, this is Max. And everybody keep in mind there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more people on the speaker list. The meeting ends in 7 minutes. So.
Yeah, quick question. On Article 1, Section C, Subsection 5, Number 3, ban on Facebook pages and groups. Do you think that that is valuable for fairness? Or do you, considering that you're able to build your own website and have people, higher barriers to build that, like, is this something
you consider? Well, what do you think? What we do with Facebook is that you can create an event and you can create pages. So we've experienced in the past that pages are groups. Because what we've experienced with groups is that someone will create a group and then just automatically add everyone that they're friends with and all their friends will add them to the group, and then you automatically get the notification from that person. And at least in our conversations over the last 2 years now, this is something that's been there for a while, is that people felt that was too much spam, that you're just getting notifications automatically. And the thing with an event is that you physically have to click on saying yes, I'm going to send this event, and then you get the updates with pictures, new platform ideas throughout the week. So that's how we try to control the Facebook activity to an extent. Now, I don't know exactly if you're arguing whether we need more access on Facebook or less on Facebook, and that's something maybe after this meeting you can talk about more, how the Facebook's role in the general election. Right, and I'm not exactly sure at the moment why not pages. Let's talk after the meeting about that.
So I will say the page structure for Facebook has since changed, because before it was the same as groups, but now the new structure of pages is that you can invite people to like the page, as opposed to before where it was the same thing as group. You could simply add everybody to your page, which was a little awkward. So it's the same thing, but yeah, you two talk after the meeting. Next, EBC Ballot. Follow by you.
So maybe I'm going crazy, but I'm pretty sure that the version of this you sent to me had like everything in red that was, or like marked the things.
So,
okay, yeah. So I just wanted to double check with you to make sure I'm not going crazy, but we don't really have the time right now, but I was going to ask you guys to kind of go through like the other points that you changed, because just because on the document it's unclear, and maybe try next week, do you think we could print this in color?
Yeah, they submitted their guidelines as an attachment, because it's not the actual resolution. Does that make sense? Yeah,
unfortunately, I personally can't change it because it's already attached to the resolution. So either what we could do is we could have everyone look at it on their computer, or we could have the office printed in color in order for all the new language to be
clear.
The only new language is about humans.
Okay. So is that better for everyone?
Great. Good time. Rep Thompson. I'm a college of B.P. Thompson. President of the Thompson.
I know that the next DOE is working with plans that we're going to be office on things. Again, plans that we're going to be office with get responses from exactly what the voter turnout was in their college or something we've had difficulty getting and navigating fast or proxy reading. But if there was some way we can get that without having people's names attached to it and just have an idea of where and what colleges are voting the most, I think should be pretty simple upon. And then I would hope, you know, I can't say the conference because it'll fall in the next one of my successors, but that he will target the areas that don't vote.
Great. Next is Rep Politi, followed by BBC.
Okay, so you said that we guys spoke about wanting to promote educated voting. And I think a big part of that are the debates. And then some of the grants in the fall. There are kind of two things that I think could be improved. One was there was a lot of speaking time. I mean, we gave kind of setting. That two chances to speak by 30 seconds each. And the second thing was, Alice and Yami were speaking, but I think there were five people in the audience. So I just wanted to speak a little bit more about how we could perform that. I mean, I think the DVP and the presentation were really well on there. They were really good for candidates. And even in the spring, I felt like the debate didn't serve their purpose. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I would encourage you over the next 7 days, if you think there is something we can change in these rules that will have an impact on what the format of the debate is here, then likely the deckers will want to hold debates. Let's absolutely try to figure that out. I don't think that through this document, this resolution is the way that you can make a debate. I think through conversations with campus leaders, through really encouraging them to be involved in the process is something that I should have.
Next is VP Lutie.
I yield my time for an interest business of the day.
Great. The next is Rep. Dundar.
Kind of tying into a little bit of what Rep. Dundar talked about. So as one of the other people who ran for the freshman election, and one of the concerns that I had was that a lot of the freshmen didn't really know what they were getting themselves into with the essay. I'm just wondering if you guys had any ideas. Really, to help people understand that this is very different from any high school government or anything like that. Because I think that was one of the things, that was a bunch of the debate as well. There were a lot of people who ran for positions, but a lot of them were really understanding the scope of the school. So if there was any more effort, I'd try to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's an awesome comment, and I think the problem every single year. Maybe we can have office hours specifically geared towards increasing the actual insight of what this is all about. We do have information sessions, but I think you have a great point. Maybe focusing more on people who have been freshman reps in the past and saying, this is what I thought, this is what it is. Or maybe a Q&A or recently asked questions this is what you may think, this is how it actually is, this is what we meet, this is a typical class limit versus what a student government is typically in high school. I think office hours are probably going to be the best way to do that. I love that there's only 25 or 30 people that work for freshman rep, it's ridiculous. So I think we could actually held office hours and publicize that people would attend it, relative compared to some other sessions in spring semester that tend to be, that tends to vary in terms of the people that show up.
And I would say, just to add to that, a lot of freshman representatives' understanding of the student assembly has to do with when the election is. We, the last few years, haven't had the idea that the first few weeks of school because, it's a rush to get freshmen on the assembly as soon as possible so that they can now move their input and be at it. And also because we get to see as the year goes on, it's much easier to do it in September when you don't have feelings yet. At the same time, election was in November or late October, freshmen representatives would have a much better idea of what the student assembly does. So that's a question that I would encourage you to raise if you shop or anything in the calendar in the summer.
Great. So this will come back as business of the day next week. If you have any proposed amendments or changes to the election rules, I encourage you to reach out to the sponsors prior to that meeting so they have time to integrate them into everything else. So the time is now 6:31, and I move to adjourn this meeting. It's been seconded. No, any dissent? Haha, joke of the day. Seeing none, have a good day. Oh, the surveys. If you filled out your survey, please. Is anybody going to collect them for?
Where's Mark?
Him?
He left.
Right.